In this, which is the opening talk of the weekend together, I would like to begin in this opening talk by speaking to about the field of meditation. I would like to give as comprehensive instructions as I can about this form of meditation. A little bit also about the background to the meditation and its place in, shall we say, the general approach to spirituality, spiritual life. In the East, when a person spends some time there, we might say what occurs is that one receives a body of teachings. The teachings are called Dharma, D-H-A-R-M-A, and the word Dharma simply means teachings. And one is exposed to a wide variety of teachings. The teachings, of course, do vary, and sometimes quite considerably, from one school, one tradition, one lineage, one teacher to another. And so some of us, some of you here, as well as myself, have been exposed to a body of teachings, either in the East or here in the West. One aspect of the teachings, of the Dharma, of the teachings, is meditation. Some of us, especially people like me, view meditation as a very useful and invaluable aspect of the teachings. And firstly, it's rather necessary, I would say, to give consideration to meditation in the broad approach to the teachings. So, for example, in the body of teachings, there's a lot of emphasis in mindfulness and awareness, in seeing into our relationship to the world around, into language and communication, into psychological, emotional, conceptual explorations, into the relationship up to the world of people, creatures, and environment. The teachings also embrace ethical considerations, non-violence, non-exploitation, non-sexual abuse, appropriate speech, avoidance of and abuse of alcohol or drugs, which is abusive. It also includes a relationship to the world in general, with the heart, love, compassion, empathy, joy, gratitude as being qualities of the heart to discover and appreciate. It includes service, includes seeing into the way the nature dependently arises. All of this is included in the body of teachings, and we might say the body of teachings is pointing directly towards liberation, pointing towards freedom, which means specifically here the ending of human suffering and liberation into joy, into wisdom, into understanding, into a transcendent realization, which we might call truth, we might call God, we might call nature, whatever. So there's the body of the teachings. included in the body of the teachings as a valuable, I would say, a valuable aspect of it is meditation. Some teachers will place meditation, formal meditation practice, work, as you and I will be engaging in here today and tomorrow, as very much in the center of it, at the core piece. To give a comparison, some teachings will say in Christianity, you couldn't possibly have Christianity without Jesus. In Dharma teachings, you can easily have Dharma teachings without Buddha, though some of us deeply appreciate his insights, his liberated understandings. But some teachers will say, you can't possibly have Dharma teachings without meditation. So the place of meditation in the broad scheme of spiritual life, spiritual inquiry for liberation and understanding, varies from person to person. So if someone like me, from my perspective, I say meditation has a very useful and invaluable place. I would not put it in the center of things, because I don't think there is a center. But as an aspect to be explored, and since I seem to devote a fair piece of my life to teaching meditation, it gives you some sense of, for me and from my point of view, appreciation and respect I have for the value of formal meditation. So while we are here, we engage in meditation fairly fully, rather fully. But it has to be seen in context. In context, in time, means you're spending a couple of days, a number of hours in formal meditation. But much of our day-to-day life, we most certainly are not spending it in formal meditation. But it doesn't mean to say that if we're not meditating every day, our spiritual life is falling to pieces. It only would fall to pieces if we think meditation is the center of it. But if we don't, then we can have be more comfortable with the use of meditation, but not make it something super special. Nothing is. So, seeing it in some context, then I would, if I may, like to speak about what is called insight meditation or vipassana meditation. Vipassana literally means insight. What has happened over the centuries, is that when, particularly in the West and in the East, when we think of vipassana, if we ever have to think of it, if we think of vipassana, we are probably thinking of a particular kind of method of meditation, with a particular kind of emphasis. Originally, this is for the scholars amongst you, originally, the word vipassana is used in Dharma teachings to mean insight. Understand? So any moment you come to some insight through inquiry, through reflection, through mindfulness, through observation, through just spontaneously, you come to some insight about life, about yourself, which is valuable. In that moment of insight, that's a moment of vipassana. Because the word insight literally means, the word vipassana literally means insight. So, if while you are engaged here in some meditations, sitting and walking, formal meditation, and you begin to see something a little bit more clearly, in the moment that you see something a bit more clearly, that's a moment of insight, that's a moment of vipassana. You can't really practice vipassana, though we use this, speak like that. What we can do is perhaps make ourselves more receptive to insights. So if while you are sitting, you notice that the breath comes and goes, that it's changing, the moment you notice that, that's a moment of insight. It might be just a moment, a little insight, it might be a very clear insight. The moment you see a thought, and you see the strength of the thought, and you just spontaneously let the thought go, you see that it's not worth clinging onto the thought, it's a moment of insight. So formal meditation practice contributes towards calmness, relaxation, being with the moment, and possibly some insight, some clarity, some understanding coming. The very fact of you coming here, possibly, the thought may have occurred in coming, it might be useful for me to come and be here, to look more carefully, to see a little bit more what's happening in my life, in life in general, what's going on. So we could say, part of the reason that you come here is that you've had some insight into yourself that it might be useful to be here and explore this. Similarly, I can say to myself, as I would say to myself, I come here because I think I've had enough insight into the meditation process to see that it's very valuable for the looking at consciousness, the looking at oneself. It's coming out of some background of insight. I don't have to go on belief, I can go on 20 years of serious and continuous exploration of meditation and its relationship to insight and liberation. So, therefore, when we engage here, we might say we are engaged in formal meditation. Through the formal meditation, we may come to some more insight about ourselves, about situations, about our way of being in the world. In the meditation instructions themselves, there are a number of things to remember, to consider here. One of the considerations, and I think we could say, whatever the considerations are, I think they're considerations which we can consider in our daily life. I don't want us to think, though we might, but that this setting here is somehow totally different from the rest of the world. I feel actually somewhat uncomfortable with even the concept retreat, because it sounds like retreating from, that like we're under attack living in the city, and now we have to retreat out here. Rather than look in that way, some of the meditation instructions might be very useful in any situation anywhere. So that we could say that here, being here, we are learning and exploring some tools, some resources, which I hope will be useful in our daily life. One of them is the posture. I think we have a lot of work to do on ourselves, on bringing consciousness to its fullness, shall we say. We can never do that, but to bring it, open it out, on posture. I think it's a real consideration. I think it's no... Yes?
Posture, what's that?
Right. So if I use any words, you know, as Anna just asked, do feel free to ask. I remember once I gave a talk in Buddh Gaya. The title of the talk was Non-Contention. In the Buddh Gaya retreat, you know, three quarters are not English as their second language, and about three quarters didn't know the meaning of the word contention. So I gave this whole talk. Anyway, it was a little bit contentious. So, If you don't understand the word, just please ask here. Right. So, say with regard to posture, the very structure of the body, the form of the body in any time or position, I think it's useful for us to be aware of. I think there's a health factor with it. When you and I are sitting in the armchair, on the underground, in the car or whatever, and are contracted, shoulders hanging down, chest hanging down, cramping liver, kidneys, spleen, diaphragm, stomach, etc. When we are eating in this form, it brings down the system. And in one of the schools, Alexander Technique, some of you may know about it, in my ex-partner, she's a student of that, in that school at the moment, and they show photographs and they have skeletons of what the body looks like when we're like this. Or like this. All these postures that we get into. And just to look at what's going on, the imbalance of the whole skeletal structure. It's no wonder people experience so much pain. It's no wonder that more working days are lost through back problems than anything else. So I think we've got a lot of work to do with ourselves. And just postural consideration for our alertness, for the opening of consciousness. So here, with regard to the posture, just simple things to bear in mind. One of them is that in the use of the posture, that the chest, diaphragm, stomach area feels reasonably open. Just a simple thing, feels reasonably open. Not too rigid. You know, sometimes you have seen, sometimes in the Zen tradition, don't want to criticize Zen tradition, but sometimes in the Zen tradition it feels terribly super upright, super straight, and sometimes it creates, for some people tell me, some tension, too much will, too much trying to hold the posture and look like a rock piece of Buddha. See, if you're a piece of rock, it's easy to look like this. But we're humans. And sometimes, you know, there are others where it's terribly cramped. Everything is terribly lowered down. I'm not going to say what tradition. So, you have sometimes these kind of extremes. And often in Vipassana teaching, often also very little is said. People, it's just left up. So I would say, in our meditations here, not going to one extreme, too rigid enough, not going down to another, but just finding in oneself some middle ground, feeling the posture is reasonably open, and remembering that in small ways, remembering when you're taking a meal, remembering when you're sitting on the train or bus, just feeling a certain sense of expansiveness in the cellular life. Very useful, helpful for our attention alertness. Then, from there, we employ, in the beginning period, during part of today, the breathing, mindfulness of breathing. Now, again, we have many different teachings, many different styles, many different techniques. In all of these meditation teachings, I will not say one is better than the other, one is more useful, more valuable, or whatever. There's too much sectarianism about method and technique, and it's rather trivial. So what I suggest is, while here, using the breathing meditation, beginning with the breathing from the in-breath, right beginning through the nose, and just experiencing the expanse of breathing. So the air element comes in, goes down through past the lung, past the throat, down into the lung. You feel the air element as your attention goes with the experience, it contributes to experiencing the expansion of the cellular life. Very important here. universe expands and contracts. We are the universe. Here we have a representation or an actuality of expression of the universe. We breathe in, and there's an expansion. We breathe out, there's a contraction. Breathe in, expansion. Breathe out, contraction. And this is going on whether we notice it or not, throughout the whole, you know, duration of our existence. And I sometimes say, if you forget how important the breathing is, it can be good just to stick one's head in a bucket of cold water, and after about half a minute, let the thought arise, how valuable is breathing? You get a pretty clear response. So with the breathing meditation, mindfulness of breathing, to experience the breathing, it in this kind of meditation, remembering that part of the reasons for it, the intentions and motivations, is towards calmness, is towards relaxation, is towards being comfortable with oneself, with the moment, and is towards seeing what's going on. Being receptive, recognizing as quickly as possible and as clearly just what's going on. So the breathing as an object for us can be very useful just to recognize what's going on. In this case, we're recognizing the breathing. The breathing may be rough and irregular. It may be soft and smooth and flowing and comfortable. It may be that you just experience a bit of the air as it goes up the nose and a little bit of the diaphragm expanding. It may be that the breath goes out and lots of moments go by before the body decides to draw in some more air element. So that, and you perhaps you notice, oh my God, I've stopped breathing. Am I going to breathe again? Well, so far on some 200 retreats, I would think, now, we haven't had to carry anybody out. So you can, I think you can be confident that when the breath goes out, even though a few seconds might go by, the next breath will come in. Because sometimes people think, let's take a breath. It will come. And this, it might be require great trust, but it, so far with everybody, it has come. Perhaps the day will come when it won't. So, in the in-breath, we're experiencing the in-breath, and we're being aware of the breath coming in and aware of the breath going out. We could say, in our life, much in our life comes into our life, and much goes out of our life. People come into our life that we love deeply, that we connect with deeply, and go out of our life. Experiences come into our life and go out. Thoughts come in and go out. Sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touch come into our life and go out. So sometimes the mindfulness of breathing, breath coming into our life, breath forming our life, and breath going out, in a way can be a reminder, a kind of existential reminder, of the nature of everything. So it might be useful in being with our breathing, just with the attention that we bring to it, just to bear in mind, just to remember. Breath comes in and breath goes out, just as people come into our life and go out of our life. While engaged in that, with the fullness of attention, isn't that fullness, meaning giving as much attention as possible to the breathing experience, it might well be, almost with certainty, the mind will spend a fairly high percentage of the time not with the breath. If you experience two consecutive breaths in a row, in one sitting, I would say, Alleluia, this is incredible. So sometimes we have this ideal that we're going to sit and be lovely little Buddhas for at least 45 minutes and experience each in-breath and each out-breath. It's unlikely. Some do. Some people do have, quite remarkably, they do have a lot of what we might call concentration power. Are able just to be quite strictly with the breathing. I personally, as a meditation teacher, don't regard your capacity to be with the breathing the whole 45 minutes or just a little bit of half a breath once as mattering that much. What to me matters as you sit there, for you, and as I sit here, is am I noticing what's going on? That, I think, is what matters. So, for example, you sit and then you have, you know, a good intention, as we would say in Buddhists like to say, clear motivation. Clear motivation, in this case, is a wish to give real care to the breathing, really experience the breathing. So I sit down, I check out the posture beforehand, I turn attention to the mindfulness of breathing, expanding with the in-breath, body contracting with the out-breath. I just start, and then suddenly I'm gone. Just gone. Gone everywhere. Thoughts, fantasies, memories, planning, futurizing, pastorizing, other places, other people, planets, space travel, what was on the cornflakes this morning that I was reading, why my lover doesn't want to sleep with me anymore, all sorts of things. Normal. This is what it is to be human. And then, after half an hour, the guy up the front says, remember to be with your breathing. Oh, right, that's the... I knew I'd come here for something. And then the tension just comes back. What I say is, can we notice as regularly as possible what's going on? You know, the teachings, the body of the teachings, say, the purpose of the teaching is to wake up. The word Buddha literally means to be awake. So the teachings is to wake up. To wake up is to see clearly, is to notice, is to see the vitality of that, the liberation of it. To notice what's going on. So when the mind wanders and drifts and gets all orderly and disorderly and confused and calm and agitated, goes through all of its stances, if we can just notice what's going on, just as it were a moment of clearness of what's going on, then bringing the attention back to the in-breathing and to the out-breathing. And to remember, no matter how it seems, this is it, just in language now, no matter how far our mind seems to go out, it's only one thought away from being here. It's only one moment away from being here. No matter how far we go, it's just a moment away from here. And even at another level, those of you engaged in meditation work and observation work and noticing work previous times, in a way, not even the wandering mind is in fact separate from all of this. Not even the wandering mind is away from this, is out of this moment. We just think it is. So our meditation, our mindfulness of breathing, we give care and attention to breathing for understand, for noticing, for observation, for mindfulness, for opening up the cellular life, for alertness and freshness in the moment, acknowledging at times, shorter or longer, we'll be with the breathing, at times we won't be with the breathing, we'll be engaged in something else. Hopefully we can pick that up and then just come back to the moment. While, just a few other things on the instructions now, and after that we'll have a break, 5-10 minutes just to stretch our legs, and then we'll have a sitting together. While engaged in sitting, you might possibly experience pain in the body. So sometimes the thought arises, oh, it's terribly unnatural to sit still. This is a very funny idea. So what we're saying is sometimes we say, it's natural to be restless, agitated, unsettled. This is natural. And sitting still, that's an unnatural thing to do. I think it's a matter of harmony and relaxation and body and mind, feelings and thoughts and body. Anyway, feeling rather comfortable with each other, feeling okay with each other. And in that, with the sitting, perhaps after a minute or 5 minutes or half an hour or whatever, you can find that pain arises. And with pain, almost by definition, if there is pain, there is usually the desire to be free from the pain. It wouldn't really be pain without usually the thought comes, I don't want this. That's what pain is. Pain is, if it's pain rather than a strong sensation, it's pain is the thought, I don't want this. If you don't have that thought, I wouldn't regard it as pain. I'd think that was more a strong sensation. So pain comes. Knee is hurting. Back is hurting. It can be anywhere in the body. You know, I've had people come to me on retreats and say, Christopher, I've got pain. But you know where the pain is? The pain, and it's really burning and it's really painful, the pain is in my hands. It's unusual, but it can be, some people, very, very painful just in the hands. One doesn't know where the pain will come from. I had a person on a retreat. This person, from the West Indies, was training to be a Jesuit, a priest in the Catholic tradition, had a rail accident when he was about 15 years old and lost both legs from above the knee. He came sitting on the retreat, and he did his walking meditation, by the way, on his hands. And he came into the retreat and he sat down. And when I was having a meeting, the interview with him, he said, I'm sitting and I'm experiencing terrible pain in my knees, which he hadn't had for 12 or 13 years. And the memory of the form of the leg, just the memory of the shape and the form of the leg and being on the floor, and he hadn't done any meditation before, was enough that he'd sit there and he'd be experiencing down in that location where there was only space, pain. What that tells me is that we might be experiencing pain in a part of the body, and we might be concluding from this pain that the pain is because of the body. If I wasn't sitting in this position, I wouldn't have this pain. It might well be true. I wouldn't disagree for a moment. It might well be true. But the force of reaction, the force of memory, the force of the image, and the emotion with the image can make the pain seem much worse. It's such a phenomenon. So sometimes when we are experiencing pain in our life, we get a sensation at the beginning, and then we start reacting, we start fighting that pain, trying to get rid of that pain, stop that pain, control that pain, use the will over that pain. We might not be realizing it, but actually we're putting wood to the fire. That we say the pain's getting so bad, it's getting worse and worse. And we're fighting, because, and in part it's due to the fighting it. So if we're sitting, and after a while we start experiencing some pain, one extreme could be to say, well, it's just my body, it's nothing else to do with anything else, it's just the way I'm sitting. That's one extreme. The other extreme to say, it's got nothing to do with my body, it's obviously all in my mind, I'm just projecting it into my body. I think that's probably another extreme. And somewhere, spiritual teachings, the body of the teachings, does emphasize the middle ground between the extremes. So, we are sitting, we're being with our breathing, after a while, we begin to experience pain. Up comes the thought, what am I going to do with this? And again, this is where each person decides for themselves. There's no criteria. So what I mean by that is, it might be useful, you're sitting, you're experiencing some pain, just to relax, if you can, be with the breathing, and just see whether, particularly with the outgoing breath is a very useful tool for dealing with pain. You're just breathing in, relaxing with the out-breath, and just see if you can let yourself relax with the out-breath in through the pain. Which sometimes softens the pain. Sometimes the pain actually just fades away completely from consciousness through non-fighting, through non-resistance. And that can be explored. It might be you explore that, you explore being relaxed, explore just experiencing, and the pain doesn't want to go away. It's still there. If it's still there, then since this work is about liberation, about freedom, one normal human freedom is to have the freedom to move. So, one moves, very simple. So, you're experiencing a lot of pain in your knee. It's just really, really hurting. So, very simple. You just take hold of the leg and you move it out. Straighten it up. Probably the pain will go away. It doesn't have to be done as a big reaction. One can just do it rather mindfully, rather slowly, move the leg out, let there be the rest, let the pain lift off, fade away, after a minute, a few minutes, bring the leg back, if you can, to where it was, and continue with mindfulness of breathing. In the walking meditation, the way of approach is to reduce the speed of walking quite considerably. We can walk in our room, or in the corridor, or outside, in the garden. And with the walking meditation, we simply walk, taking one step at a time, being very conscious of the fact of taking one step at a time, and the heel of one foot barely goes in front of the toes of the other. The eyes are open and just held to see where we are going, just a few feet in front of ourselves, the attention is initially directed towards the contact each time the foot touches the ground. So, for example, if we were in our room, either here or at home, and we wish just to settle ourselves right into the living present, we could just simply walk very mindfully, very slowly, from one end of the room to the other, taking one step at a time, being grounded with the movement, grounded with the present, walking from point A to point B and back to point A. As we get more established, we can expand out the field of mindfulness from that contact each time a foot touches the ground to that full and comprehensive awareness of the whole body, the entire organism engaged in movement, a human being moving moment to moment through her or his environment. Again, feeling relaxed with that, steady with that, conscious too of thought patterns which arising and passing during the walking process, so that we're not just, as we so often are in life, just directed towards the goal, towards the destination, and rather neglecting the whole experience of walking. As though, for example, we had been injured, we had broken our ankle, and we began to walk for the first time after weeks of being disabled. We would appreciate walking just for walking. And it's that kind of attitude and receptivity that we wish to bring to walking, to sitting, to breathing, harmonizing our being with the world around us. So, in conclusion, with the meditation instructions, we can apply these meditation instructions anywhere. We can, of course, walk mindfully and consciously at normal speed. We can sit in the underground or on an aeroplane or on the park bench and just be conscious of sitting, full attention to the breathing experience. And if we're feeling established, expanding out that awareness to include the whole body. Just mindfulness of sitting, mindfulness of walking, mindfulness of standing, mindfulness of reclining. In this, the whole being, the very cellular life, becomes increasingly more conscious and receptive to the world that we live in. And so instead of having to keep making the effort to be with the living present, to be accessible to what is happening around us through our senses, we find that it becomes effortless. It's not a great deal of work to be with the present. Through our receptivity, the present reveals much more. We sense that sense of integration with seeing, with hearing, with smelling, with tasting, with touching, with sitting, with walking. And in that, we find our harmony and our well-being, and we are aware of the way the world is, for the welfare of others, for the welfare of ourselves, for the welfare of life. May all beings live in